Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers and sisters, Mr. Stevie Mack has entered the building.
Whoop whoop to the whoop whoop, yeah!
Broadcasting live out of Hollywood, California, getting down with the getting down like we always do. Monday through Thursday, there is the call time. Be there or be square. Let me give you the calling number if you're locked in and loaded up from around the world. Like I know you is, the calling number here is, there it goes, 646-716-6113. Again, that's 646-716-6113. 6113. And then there are all the lucky numbers. You call those numbers, you just might be brought on to the air to participate in tonight's show. Man, we got Montel Jackson, Big Mike, and everyone all locked in and loaded up, ready to comment on any and or all the topics we encroach upon tonight. Let me ask you the question of the day. The question of the day is a very important question. I always ask this question. How is your day? Huh? How is your day? I hope your day is as off the chain as mine. My day is always off the chain. If it's ever on the chain, I yiggity yank it all the way off the chain because I like walking my dogs off the leash from the west to the east. I could be a beast when I unleash this here lyrical feast into your ear hole. My story's old as bold as twice as nice. This is Stevie Mack. Let me ask you a question. How's your life? Man, I'm chilling out here in Chevy the Hills with a super producer named Sean working in Hollywood, getting down. What to get down. I don't know if they can hear you, Sean. Let me see. Say something.
Hey, what's up, people? How's it going tonight?
Let me see. Why can't I hear you? Let me see. Let me check out.
Boogie on the boards, you messing up?
Say that again, son.
Boogie, you messing up them boards?
Yo, your phone is hung up. You gotta call in again. You live?
Come on.
Let me see. I don't hear you. Oh, let me see something. Oh, you gotta push one of your keyboard. That's why. I gotta bring you on. Here we go. I'm sorry. I got Sean live on now. Say what's up, Sean.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
There we go.
All right.
Okay, so you keep on heading down that way, and I'm going to holler at you, player. this is your boy, Stevie Mack. Now, Sean's a super producer out of Hollywood, getting down with the get down. Sean, how long have you been in the entertainment business producing?
About 11 years now. It's 11 years.
Now, a lot of people don't know what a producer is. They hear the word producer, and they just don't know. Like, they hear director. Not, a lot of times you know what a director is. He's the one yelling, action, cut, and doing all that stuff. We know what an actor is. What does a producer do?
A producer is just an overpaid babysitter. We do a whole lot of nothing. No, in all seriousness, you know, there's a lot that goes into producing. It's a lot of keeping everybody on task, knowing where the deadline is. You're managing a lot of people and having to wear a lot of hats. So there's a client relationship that you need to maintain. There's the director you need to keep happy, and then there's also all the worker that goes into filming a shoot, you know, what have you. And then there's also the post end of it, where I specialize in making sure all the pictures and the images are pretty at the end of the day, and making sure that you're going to deliver a good and well delivered product. And
yeah, I remember one. Go ahead. I'm sorry,
yeah,
I cut
ahead.
You off.
No, no. Well,
I remember a friend.
Yeah.
What?
Go ahead.
Who's talking? Go ahead. You talk.
All right. No, what I specialize in is post production. And you know, I definitely can wear the live action producer hat as well. But where I really find that my strength is in the post production, where sometimes you're shooting, but sometimes you're not, and everything's being created from the computer, which can be really, really powerful. And you know, there's a lot of things that go into that facet. So anything with post production is kind of like my expertise. That's all I wanted to say.
A lot of people. Well, a friend of mine once told me this. He said, you know, your dream that you want to come true of filmmaking or making a movie or a TV show, it's going to be hundreds of people to make that happen. And a lot of people don't see that because they see themselves as a sole individual on a journey to make certain things happen. They don't know it takes a team effort to pull things together and make it happen.
100%. I mean, that's the whole thing why I really love this industry is like, you know, because there are a lot of strenuous days and there is a lot of hours. But the thing is that there's nothing more beautiful than, you know, working on a set or working on a project that involves a one final project because, you know, there isn't one person that's more important than the next. A lot of times you see that get confused and gets handled wrongly. But, you know, if when there's a team of people, 30, 40 people that are all working towards one thing and they all have that idea that there's, you know, one thing in mind and when it all comes together, it starts to click, it's like beautiful gears and a clock working together to make the time work. You know, it's exactly like your friend said. It's a really beautiful thing.
That is a beautiful thing when it's a concerted effort. Now, have you ever been on a production where maybe there's one person who's an asshole and he stands out from everybody else and everybody realizes it on the set?
Yeah, hundreds of times. It's a lot of times. It's a lot
is
of,
that person
lot
usually, nine times out of ten, is that person usually somebody in charge or somebody who wants to be in charge?
That's somebody who wants to be in charge.
And maybe they're higher up on the totem pole than you, say, on this production, but they're not the highest on the totem pole. How do you deal with something like that?
I mean, you know, my experience, to be honest, is all I can speak from is, like, I think it's basically trying to keep them away from to most of the people. I mean, I have to say, a lot of the times it's the creative director or the client that can really, really mess up kind of the whole flow of everything, because a lot of times you're working to put something together, you're getting everything correct, or you're prepping for a shoot or in towards to show one person, like a client, a director, or even an agency, and you'll present to them, and it isn't so much what they say, it's how they deliver it, and it's almost like you could be working for, you know, 3 weeks to 2 months to present somebody with, you know, for instance, like a previs, and if, for those that don't know, previs is a pre-visualization. And what that is it's an animation that's going to show what you're going to shoot in camera. So basically,
is that also called like an elevated storyboard?
Yeah, elevated shooting board, but it's done in 3D. So all the characters, it's almost like a cartoon. And a lot of studios adapted this process because they noticed that it could save them a lot of money. Because when you shoot on the camera, essentially what you want to be is you want to be 100% ready to know exactly what you're going to shoot. And a lot of people...
Because that's where all your money's at, huh? You got
exactly,
all these people you got to pay that day.
Yeah. Previs is key because a lot of people think that, oh, you know, I just want to... I got this idea that I want to do. When's the shoot date? 2 weeks from now. Cool. They don't think about it till the day before. Okay, and then they get on set. Here's what I want to do. And the whole time you got a team of people working to shoot this in a certain way, and then when you get on set, the director can be like, no, scrap that. We want to try something different. Let's try this. And it's like, well, we're not pressed for that. We don't have lights. We don't have this, that, another thing. We don't have a sound. We don't have a huge water park. We don't have that. That's not here. So a lot of times you can have that happen. And you know what? To be honest, sometimes you go in with a plan, and then the client's on set in Video Village, and they say, this isn't working for us. And, you know, it's just like when these things happen, it's always good to be a duck on the pond, moving them legs fast but not letting anybody see it come. You know what I mean? Just maintaining a calm attitude, if you will, sir. You know, please.
I like
thank
that
you.
Idea.
Yeah. You know,
a duck on the pond. Now, what kind of software would one use to do what you call a previs, this cartoon animated elevated storyboard?
Oh, there's a million different software. My preference would be to use a software called Maya, but you really can previs with a number of different softwares. For instance, you can previs with Cinema 4D, and you can even previs with a software called After Effects. There's a plugin called 3D Elements, so if you wanted to do kind of anything kind of 3D, you could show it. But, I mean, my preference would be Maya because you can really replicate the coordinates of what you're going to shoot and take into account the type of lens you want to have on it. And you can really kind of plot out your whole shooting schedule and how you're going to – what camera moves you're going to use. You know, if you wanted to shoot someone, you know, standing on the basketball court and it's just a lock-off camera, that's great. That's no problem. But if you want to shoot the person standing on the basketball court and you want the camera to kind of slowly drift in and then move around them in a 360 and then come back around again, in order to see how long and how much time that's going to take for a commercial, for a film, you know, if you can do it in a 3D software, you can pick your lens. You can use a telephoto long lens. You can use a short lens.
Huh.
And you can see how the camera, it looks very, very different if you have certain kind of lenses on there. So, and you can time out, okay, cool, we need to have a dolly track. So, okay, let's call the DP. Let's make sure that we have this track. Oh, okay, we can't get that track. Well, what about this? Let's explore this option about using somebody on a Steadicam. Oh, you know what? I don't have a guy on a Steadicam, but you know what? I do know a guy who has this new thing. It's called a drone. I think he can fly it in that way. Oh, that's interesting. Let's try to replicate
yeah.
that. So the thing is, you can kind of, by doing a big, big pre-production and really emphasizing and working your ass off, you can make your shoot day easy. You can make your delivery to client. So, I mean, if any advice to anyone out there, I would say pre-production is the most important, and to plan and to put in all the hours there. Because if you do the hard work first, it makes delivering easy. You know what I mean?
It's funny you say that, because I painted houses before, and the clients don't understand that prepping the house for paint is the biggest part of the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Taping off,
yeah.
Putting up drop cloths, you know, sanding. All this stuff has to be done before the paint is rolled on. Rolling the paint on is the easy part.
That's
so,
the easy part. I used to paint houses too. I totally know. There you go.
For a production.
Yeah, blue tape.
Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people underestimate how much it's going to cost to make this happen, because they don't understand how much really goes into it. So let me just start by saying first, when all these programs you discuss, like Maya, After Effects, and the fact that you know how to do a pre-viz animated piece, and all the stuff, knowing lenses and all that, that takes years of learning and knowledge and know-how. Everybody don't know that, right? So they got to pay for that, for one. They got to pay your time and knowledge and the time it took for you to learn all that and to put all that down. How often do you run into people who underestimate the cost of what it's going to take to pull off a production?
99% of the time. Everybody
And how do they – what makes them underestimate? What do they think is going to – give us a scenario. Like, for instance, they thought it was going to cost this, but it cost that, and why?
I'll give you a perfect example. Let's say client A, right? They want to do this shoot, and they want to feature this product. And essentially what happens, client wants to do it for X amount of dollars, right? And you say, okay, cool, we'll definitely be able to do that. But they want to have, you know, this product explode and then come back into each other again. And you go, listen, we can do that, but it's going to be done in a stylistic way. It's not going to be photo real. And they say, okay, cool. We design style frames for that, right, in the pre-production process. And we say, here, this is a frame, and this is exactly how one of the final frames is going to look. Are you okay with that? Yes. Great. Can you get an approval on that? Yes. Thank you. And then when you go into production, we show them the pre-res, we show them the grayscale, and this is animation I'm talking about. And they finally, you know, they approve it, and then we go to final render it, and then, you know, we give it to them, and we say, you know, we say, okay, here it is, and they start seeing some of the shots be final rendered, and they're like, oh, but it doesn't look real. And like, I think that's one thing that always comes back is that people don't understand in animation, for instance, how difficult it is to have something look absolutely photorealistic real. You know, I think a lot of people are caught up with the cinema, and they see the, you know, Transformers and the Avengers, and they oh my God, look at these guys. And they, you know, one of these 10 of these movies come out a year, right? And we're kind of almost like numb to how difficult it is. It's like, the truth of the matter is, these studios that have these huge explosions or huge photorealistic effects that go on, they have multi-million dollar servers and amazing world-class artists, you know, staff. And I think that's a big thing that where I've noticed is that is that you communicate to your client, hey, we can't do it for this tight budget, But here's what
right.
we can do for that tight budget. And then we express that to them, you know, in a style, and we say, here's what we can do, and then we end up giving it to them. And nine times out of ten, if you're doing your job right, either one or two things are going to happen. They say, okay, you know what, we can't do it. Or they'll agree to do it, and then along the way, it'll be a learning process for them. But I would say that was the first thing that came to my mind about, you know, an experience where that situation occurred.
So I would suggest to anybody out there listening that if you are curious as to what it takes to put all that together, don't leave the movie theater immediately after you see a special effects-driven movie like Mad Max or Transformers or any of those. Stay for a minute. Look at all the credits. Thousands of names that are up there when you see CGI and After Effects and all the stuff like that. It takes thousands of people with hundreds and hundreds of computers just sitting up. They call them render farms. Hundreds of computers just rendering. And what is rendering? If you could describe what rendering is, what would you say rendering is?
So rendering, I would say, is when basically you I'll go back to animation because I think it's probably pretty good example for it. So let's go back to Previs. So Previs, you animate our guy. Let's say we animate our guy just walking, right? So he's
in a
wireframe. In a wireframe, right? Then we'll do something. We'll put an AO pass on it, and that's ambient occlusion. And that will just have him look like he just has like kind of a gray tint to him. And then once you know, he's not in any environment or anything like that. And what we'll do is we'll look at it. Okay, well, human beings don't look gray. What we have to do to make it look, you know, real, we have to put a texture on it. Then we have to take a light and put a couple lights in there to recreate a photorealistic lighting. Then once we attach the texture, like the skin texture, the cloth texture, and it has to all be plotted out, we then have to put the light in there and have the light shine in it, however it's going to look so it looks photorealistic. And once we attach those textures to the model and we have our light in there and it's looking good, we render it. And what rendering is, it's attaching the textures and the lighting that's set up onto that 3D model. And then we get a pass, so we get a pass of a render. Right, and what those passes might be ambient occlusion passes, which is all different types of lighting, a diffusion pass. So there's hundreds and hundreds of lighting passes, and then there's another step that comes into play. It's called the composite, and basically what you're doing is you're compositing all those layers of lighting and texture into one kind of film. So and that, let's just say that's our guy, right? Gray texture, but you put skin texture, you put the cloth texture, whatever clothes he's wearing, and then you composite it, and that's a whole different type of software. Different from the Maya, the Cinema 4D. You know what I mean? It's a whole different game, and these guys are called compositors, and they can work on a number of different platforms. An old school
composing,
one.
Is compositing like flattening the image or putting it all in one together?
It's basically compositing all the layers together from your render passes, right? And this is back to animation as well, but you'll build it all together, and basically you use programs. A big computer that's been used a ton and still is actually used to this day, which kind of dominated the whole production field for probably 20 years, is a thing called the Flame. And the Flame is a high-powered node-based computer that really can just like manipulate high-res imagery. But with the advent of computer software, that's kind of come up. There's a great company called Foundry, and they use a program called Nuke, which has been great. And actually, After Effects can do some pretty powerful compositing as well. But, yeah, I would say, like...
I always thought Flame was a software. That's an actual computer, huh?
Well, I think it started off as a computer, but now it's to software. I mean, at one time, these things with the SGIs were about $1 million a piece. Back in the early 90s, and this is, like, kind of... going back way, way back to where these things were expensive. You know what I mean? You had to have at least one of these to be even called serious. You know what I mean? And where now...
I always... go ahead.
I was going to say, well, now you have this software like Nuke from the Foundry, which is, you know, you can rent it for purchase it for... You can rent, I think, for like $1,500, something like that, and you can purchase it for $7,000. So to a studio, you know, you look at like, okay... Do I purchase this big Flame box, or do I go with, you know, a Nuke software? And actually, that's even affected the Flame boxes to come out with software where you could like rent it for months for $700. So everything's getting real cheap, and it's great to see, you know, because a lot more people can get exposure to it. But it's a deep and vast pool of, you know, artists and management levels that go into literally every frame.
And again, that's another added cost that you pass on to the client, that if you have to rent this machine for $700.
100%, man. 100%. Yeah,
yeah.
But, I mean, that goes in.
And
all,
they don't anticipate all,
into...
all that. They don't all that.
Well, the thing is that if you have a seasoned pro who can sell them this from the get-go and not be so shy to, like, you know, either pass on the job but doesn't have the right kind of budget to do the real crazy effects, or if you can kind of say, hey, we can't do this, but here's what we can do to make some and basically, you know, try to win the business, I think that's a smart way to go about it. Be like, okay, listen, here's three different budgets. Here's what you want. Here's a mid-level, and here's a low-level with an option of that's stylistically treated. And, you know, I think there's ways to cut corners to find things that you can do for cheap, you know what I mean, and still hit on what your client's needs are. But definitely if you want to go high end, especially like, you know, Transformers or Incredible Hulk jumping out of a screen, is like, you know, you're gonna need like 30 people at least minimum to do it with a ton of software and hardware.
And that, my friend, is where the budget comes in. I always explain to people about rendering as this. The first thing I do when I'm putting it together in the timeline on the computer, all this imagery and stuff that you see that we shot, that's like me drawing a picture of a house that we're going to build. And rendering is when the actual crew gets out there and start nailing boards and shit together. That's the rendering process.
Kind of.
Yeah.
You know, but rendering's nailing the boards together, putting the couch in, putting the wallpaper
yeah.
on. You know what I mean? Painting the house, like making sure the grass is watered, making sure, you know, it's almost like the final touch, and then you get the compositor to come in and be like, okay, let's stock the fridge. Oh, you know what? Let's make sure that little shingle, let's replace that shingle. The renderers didn't get that. You know what I mean? It's very much, I equate the pre-production to the foundation of the house, right? And then the compositing is when you're putting up the curtains. And if your foundation ain't right, the whole shit's coming down.
And that's when the client comes in and goes, you know what? Can you move this wall over there instead of over here?
Exactly.
You're like, the roof
at
is already on.
When you're like,
yeah.
We just built this house. We cannot put a bathroom in the middle of the living room. Like, it's not going to work. The plumbing is already rigged. We're done here. You know?
Well, no. We could do it, but it's going to cost you a whole lot.
Exactly. It's going to cost a lot of money. Exactly.
So there's this circle. There's an idea of a circle peace sign, basically. So you draw a circle. Then you draw a line down the middle of that circle, and then you draw one line off to the right. So like a sideways T, right, in a circle. And here it is. In each of these areas, so you got three triangles now, right?
Mm-hmm.
In each of these areas, you write this. Fast, cheap, right. So you can only have two. You can't have it fast and right.
Yeah.
Or you can have fast, it ain't going to be fast and right. If it's fast and right, it ain't going to be cheap. That's how it goes. If it's fast and cheap, it ain't going to be right. Something's going to be left out of this triangle. So you can get it cheap and right, but it ain't going to be fast. It's going to take a long time. All right?
Right.
You can get it fast and cheap, but it ain't going to be right. So I seen that one time, that pie divided like that, and it blew me away. I was like, that's true. I was at a place called Studio Film and Tape in Hollywood, which was a which was an Expendables house where they sell stuff that you use. They call it Expendables because this is stuff that you use every day in production, like tape,
black tape,
film, grip tape, but actually tapes that you put in the camera, videotapes, and celluloid film, and clapboards, and all the stuff that you use in the film production industry. Studio Film and Tape is closed. It's been closed for many years, and the reason why is because of digital. Digital has changed the game totally.
For sure.
When I went to film school, we actually learned how to film on celluloid, 8mm,
wow.
8mm film. Mm. We cut it on a Helvetic splicer with tape, taping the film together, how things used to be done. Then videotape. You know, then mm-hmm. the VHS beta, mini DV mm-hmm. came, rue the day.
Mm-hmm.
Then came digital, HD, hard drives. So
mm-hmm.
what's happening now in the world that we live in a streaming society now, the medium is being cut out. Like, for instance, when you go to a Stevie Mac show, you can buy a T-shirt, but with that T-shirt comes a code that you can go watch some limited edition streaming video of Stevie Mac on a website that you have to have that code to watch it on. So instead
mm-hmm.
of me selling you my film and my product, you get it free, but you buy something else. So that people have to figure out a way to sell their products now. Like, a lot of musicians are giving away the music free through Spotify and different streaming services, but
mm-hmm.
you pay to go see their concerts.
Right. Changing right now. You know, I have really close friends in the music industry, and, you know, a lot of them are very reluctant to go on tour, but when they saw how much other people were making on tour, they, you know, they're out there now. And, like, yeah, they're giving away the music for free to generate, promote their music so people come to see them live. I have a friend who's a DJ who plays at all these big festivals, and, you know, it's not just him. He's not taking this all the way home, but he's, you know, he's bringing home 300,000K. I mean, 300K
wow.
for one show.
As a DJ.
Yeah, 300K,
man.
One show, one day. You know what I mean? And they always try to do two shows, because basically the 300K will pay for all the crew and everything like that, and then the second day's profit.
My
you know,
God.
That's why, like, I saw Puffy. Puffy's doing this whole, like, oh, Bad Boy Reunited tour. And, you know, he announced it, I think, this past week. And then today on Instagram he goes, due to overwhelming demand, we're going to do day two. Bro, you were doing day two from the get-go. Come on. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
And, like, I say that, you know, that changed the music industry, but, like, I tell you right now, even the platform of film and digital film is changing, and it's going into a place where, I mean, people don't even know what's going to be happening in the next coming years. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you. I mean, that might be another show to talk to you about what's going on with virtual reality. And how that
oh,
is
VR
be.
The VR thing is taking off, man.
Oh,
that's the next
oh.
thing, VR.
Yeah, I mean, if
so
I would say
you have
there,
a new upstart
yeah.
yourself, Wonderkind Productions.
That's right. Wonderkind Productions, the number one NDRKND.com. Go check it out. Yeah, just started it up, and it's kind of like an all encompass creative hub. What we do at Wonderkind is really be able to go out there and shoot, edit, post, production, anything, and come up with creative ideas in terms of strategy. And, you know, we're just trying to, it's a bunch of artists that, you know, have been working in the industry for some time, and, you know, we all love working together, and we all are talented in our own ways, so we're just trying to get out there and do some fun stuff, because I think a lot of us come from, you know, working on a lot of these jobs that are fun, but, you know, they aren't as creative as we would love them to be. So, you know, we're just out there just starting, and it's fun. It's fun.
And to validate yourself, who are some of the popular clients, brand names, and celebrities that you've been honored to work with?
I've had the absolute pleasure, and I've been blessed enough to work with such big companies as Nike, Adidas, LG, Jordan brand, of course. I did a really, really great, amazing, I think it's one of the funnest projects I did for last year's NBA All-Star Game, where we replicated three moments of Michael Jordan. And it was featured in New York City, where I was born and raised. So it was a really, really epic thing. If you ever have a chance to check it out, it's on the website, wonderkind.com, but it's also, you can check it out. It's Michael Jordan's last shot. And that was kind of an experiential project where, you know, we went and shot and replicated, you know, moments of Michael Jordan. So 1982 at UNC, 1998 where Chicago Bulls were in the finals against Craig Elo and the Utah Jazz. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was Byron Russell and the Utah Jazz. And then we allowed these kids who, you know, really had an issue with Michael Jordan. They thought the shoes were cool, but they never saw Michael Jordan play. So what we tried to do was allow them to step into the shoes of Michael Jordan and really, you know, step on a court. And when they stepped on the court, you know, it was 50 foot on the ground, 50 foot wall, 50 foot in front with a real live basketball hoop. And, you know, these kids got to come in and have a little bit of an augmented reality where they actually had the environment of Michael Jordan, where they got the basketball and they were being defended, and they had to, you know, had 7 seconds to shoot and hit the shot, and you know, they had an appreciation for it, you know. So I think the world of commercials and film is kind of changing really fast and rapidly before our eyes. And, you know, a lot of the clients that I work with, like Nike, like Mountain Dew, like Gatorade even, they're starting to adapt and see, like, wow, the 30-second commercial really, really doesn't bias as much as it used to. It's more about an impression that it can cause. And, you know, as the world is growing and everything's, like, kind of expanding, and, you know, there's a lot of these events going on, you know, take notice of what goes on in these tech events like South by Southwest. You go there, and it's not like, oh, let's go to the booth and see what's going on. It's like, no, let's step into a world and let's experience something, you know?
So it's becoming totally immersive, interactive, and content-driven with the advertising, because they have to spend advertising dollars, and the way of commercials are changing drastically. We've been listening to Sean Sullivan. He's a super producer out of Hollywood, California, with Wonderkind Productions. This is his new comedy. Tell people where they could find you in social media, Twitter, Instagram, your website again.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Sean Goes West. The website again is www.1ndrknd.com. And shoot me a like and check out some of the stuff that I've done, course of the last 11 years.
And that Sean Goes West is S-E-A-N, Sean. S-E-A-N-G-O-E-S-W-E-S-T. Sean Goes West. Thank you so much for spitting all that game with us tonight, player. In fact, we will have you here for another show this week to talk and elaborate more on the future of virtual reality, because that there is a topic all by itself. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Stevie. Thanks for having me. Pleasure is mine.
Indeed. For all those listening to us in the archives, this is our 1,477th episode. You can get all our episodes free on iTunes. Go subscribe to Stevie Mac Radio on iTunes for free. You can find it at steviemac.com, steviemac.com. You push that radio button at the top where it says Stevie Mac Radio and subscribe to the show for free. And all those listeners alive and in living color, we got Brother Malcolm out of Pennsylvania. Hey, let's bring Brother Malcolm in and see what it do, boo-boo, on the West Coast. Brother Malcolm, how you doing? I can barely hear you, Brother Malcolm.
Hey, what's up, Street Matt?
How are you, brother? You got out of surgery last night. Are you doing better tonight?
Yeah, but the alarm went off. I was asleep. And then I woke up, I had poop all over me. So the ladies are cleaning me up. I'm being a hard time because I want to do the show and not take a bath. So
to all at the same time, when they give you a sponge bath, looking at your junk, you trying to be on the radio show. Hey.
3 hours in a day. One hour I got to poop all over myself.
Hey, it happens, man. No, the one hour that's during the radio show, but you're recovering. And those who are listening, Brother Malcolm is a staple on this show, all the way from Pennsylvania. He's my Ed McMahon on this show, and Brother Malcolm has gone through extensive stomach cancer surgery twice, if I'm not mistaken, and chemo and all that stuff. And he's a survivor, man. You're hanging in there, Brother Malcolm, and that's what matters, and we love you, man. Stay strong and get better. We're going to close this show out by telling you to visit steviemac.com once again and telling you the truth, because the truth shall set you free. And the truth is, Brother Malcolm, go and tell them what the truth is.
The world is listening.
Yeah. Oh, man, I was supposed to push this button when he say that. I was supposed to push a button, and the button wouldn't allow me to do it. So let's see if I can get to the damn button.
Send the girl over to watch you?
I'm having technical difficulties here. Damn it, I hate when that happens. So push the damn button, and you can't get to the damn button. Well, here it is right here. Hold on, let me see if I can push it. There it is.
Brothers and sisters, Mr. Stevie Mac.
Good night, Brother Malcolm.
We'll see you later.